from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
From Louisville Public Media.
Support for this podcast comes from Kindred Healthcare, specializing in rehabilitation and long-term acute care services for 30 years. Questions about care after a hospital stay can be answered by speaking with a registered nurse at 1-866-KINDRED. And from KTC Building, seamlessly blending the classic character of older structures with 21st century amenities and technologies. Residential and commercial remodeling projects of any size. Details at KyleThompsonCompany.com.
Since its creation at the beginning of the 20th century, Louisville's free public library system has been a witness to and part of the city's history. Everything from floods to segregation to suburban sprawl and the internet. The Louisville Free Public Library is also the birthplace of this radio station and our sister station, WFPK. I'm Rick Howlett. Today on WFPL's In Conversation, we'll talk about Louisville's free public library system with its new director, Lee Birchfield, and others. We'll also discuss how the library works with nonprofit organizations and other institutions to offer various programs and services. We also want to hear from you. Which library branches do you use, and what services and programs do you like or wish they offered? Louisville's free public library system, this hour on WFPL's In Conversation.
Communities across this country are losing their most reliable sources of local news. Well, fortunately, public radio is still going strong, and that's thanks to listeners who donate. I'm David Green. Please support local and national journalism.
Support now at WFPL.org.
Well, since we're doing a show today on libraries, my colleague Jake Ryan suggested that in the spirit of the topic, we should whisper the entire show. We won't do that, but if somebody gets too loud, we may have to shush someone. Welcome to WFPL's In Conversation, where we get program support from Kindred Healthcare. I'm Rick Howlett. And today we're going to talk about Louisville's libraries and the historic free public library system. We're joined by two people who help run the system and someone from an organization that depends on the library system to help do its work. Joining us are Library Director Lee Birchfield, who's been with the system for more than 20 years. He's held multiple posts with the system, including Assistant Director, Assistant Branch Manager, Electronic Resources Supervisor, and other titles. Lee, welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Chandra Gordon is joining us. She is the executive director of the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation, which offers which supports the system, obviously, in various ways, which we'll find out more about in a few minutes. Welcome, Chandra. Good to have you.
Happy to be here.
And Caitlin Robolino is here. Caitlin is coordinator of Educational Justice Tutoring Program that depends on the library system to do its work. It's one of the many nonprofits and organizations that interact with the Free Public Library system. Caitlin, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're also going to hear from some library patrons, people who regularly use Louisville's libraries. Our producer, Caitlin Jackson, caught up with some of them this week. And we'll discover that libraries are much more than a place to check out books, although you can, of course, still do that. We want to hear from you. Do you have a question or comment about your library or the Louisville Free Public Library System? Is there a program you'd like to see the library offer that's not available now? If you're happy with your library, you're welcome to tell us why. I'm sure Lee would like to hear some of those comments as well. Call us 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. We're also on Twitter. Our handle is WFPL News, and we're on Facebook as well. Lee, let's start with you and kind of a wide look at Louisville's library system. Give us an overview of the current size of the system, its health, and what's going on.
Sure. So the Louisville system has right now 16 locations, our main library, and then three regional libraries that we've built really in about the last 10 years. It's been a great time of growth in terms of the facilities, but we have over the past 10 years or 11 years, really since about 2008, have been struggling with some issues around operating funding. that really have come to a head this year with the budget situation in metro government. But circulation, you know, circulation of library materials, that is really doing great. We peaked back in about 2006 or 2007. We were circulating over 4 million items a year as a result of some of the changes that we've seen in our operating budget, the amount of money we have to purchase materials. We've seen that circulation taper off a little bit, but we're still at levels that are higher than what they were in the mid-90s. So there's this perception that people don't check out books from libraries anymore. And our experience, that's really not true. Programming, you know, we have some great programs going on right now. We're getting ready for our Gonzo Fest, which is next week. We've just had our How To Festival the week after Derby. We had thousands of people show up at the main library for that. So people are turning out for our programs. They're coming to check out books. They're coming to use computers, to use study space, to use meeting rooms. So on the one hand, our library system is healthy and is doing great work in the community. On the other hand, we've got some challenges that we have to deal with.
And we'll discuss those in just a short while. But Chandra, I want to turn to you to talk about the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation. Give us an overview of how the foundation operates and what it does for the library system.
Sure. Well, the Library Foundation came into existence about 1980 when some private citizens realized there needed to be that extra margin of support for the library. The library is a public institution, but private dollars can really fund some excellent programming and additional resources for the library. For example, the foundation supports the summer reading program. We just finished our capital campaign for the Northeast Regional Library, and we've been very engaged with the master facility plan and helping to build that out. So we work with private donors to supplement public dollars.
Caitlin Robolino, let me turn to you. Tell us about Educational Justice, which I described as a tutoring program, but I'm sure it's much more than that. How important are libraries to what you do? And talk about the program itself.
Yeah, so, well, at its core, yes, that's what it is, a tutoring program. It is a free tutoring service for 5th to 8th grade low-income students. So it is a scholarship. You interview for it, and then if you're accepted into the program, you receive a tutoring scholarship that is good for the entire year for private one-on-one tutoring via our high school honor society. So that means that our tutors are between 9th and 12th grade. They, as part of their honor society requirement, they are required to be a tutor to one of these students in 5th to 8th grade and do their community service that way. And so that's how we're able to kind of pair them together.
And you utilize the library system. This is where the tutoring takes place?
Yes, that's correct. We do have it in our offices downtown, but we also use the libraries quite frequently.
You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL, where today we're talking about Louisville's library system. 502-814-TALK is our number if you have a question or comment about Louisville's libraries. Lee Birchfield, the library director, is here. Chandra Gordon, who's executive director of the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation, and Caitlin Robolino with Educational Justice, one of the many nonprofits and other organizations that uses the library and its facilities. Well, Lee, let's go back to the budget. The new metro government budget is in place for the current fiscal year. We've been reporting a lot about various cuts because of the pension obligation and so forth. What impact is the new budget having on the library system, and how are you adjusting to it?
Sure. So, when the final budget was passed by Metro Council, we ended up with, depending on how you look at it, between $800,000 and $1.2 million in budget reductions. So the $800,000, we know we're going to have to deal with that. In addition to that, there's another $412,000 that was allocated by Metro Council for the Middletown Library in order to reopen that in a new space. And if that comes to fruition, then we won't be looking at that budget reduction. So that, let's talk about the $800,000. As a result of that, we've what Metro government calls attrited 9 full-time positions. So these are positions that we lost, but they were not occupied or filled at the time that we eliminated those positions. We managed to make most of those changes in non-public service areas so that we would be able to try and continue to operate all of our libraries at normal operating hours. So when we were having the conversations about the budget and Metro Council was deliberating over the mayor's proposed budget, one of the proposals that was in the budget originally was to reduce operating hours across the system from, right now they vary between, say, 56 or 58 and 68 hours a week, depending on location. So there was a proposal on the table to reduce that to 40 hours at every location except for the regional libraries. Metro Council made changes to the budget, so we didn't have to implement that. That would have been a devastating change all across the county to the availability of library services for people. But the $800,000 is really having real impact on our ability to provide service to the community. We lost a couple of program coordinators, so those are people who would travel around the county and do educational programming for people of all ages. We lost a facilities manager position. We lost an education manager position. So that was the person who designed a lot of the programming that we had. And then, of course, we lost the staffing for our Fern Creek Library. So the Fern Creek Library, as well as the Middletown Library, are currently closed.
And that brings us to a Twitter question from Rob. It says, my understanding is that the Fern Creek Library landlord was trying to work out a deal to keep the library open, I assume, months prior and got nowhere. Was closing Fern Creek always planned, and where do we stand on replacing it?
Sure. So closing Fern Creek was not always planned. The library master plan, which was adopted in its recent form in 2008, actually calls for expanding the Fern Creek Library. So that prior to a few months ago, that was not on the radar at all. If the landlord was trying to work out deals with somebody, it was conversations that were taking place that I wasn't part of. So I'm neither going to confirm or deny that. I'll just say that I wasn't part of those conversations. So I would say that right now the situation is that the Fern Creek Library is closed. Metro Council allocated $100,000 of capital money in the budget. That money would be spent to do some site planning and some initial conceptual designs as we start moving toward fulfillment of the master plan, which would be to build a library in Fern Creek. But before we can really do that, we've got to solve the operating cost issues that we've got.
And the budget has not had any effect on the plans you had, long-range plans you had to build three regional libraries, the third of which has been open, right?
Well, right. So that was really the cornerstone of the library master plan was those three regional libraries. We just opened the third one, the Northeast Regional, opened in early June. And we are delighted to have those. I would say that the impact that the budget has had on those is that operating those regional libraries adds to our total operating costs. And the budget reductions that we're seeing move us further away from the amount of money that we expect it to cost to operate that library system. So it is having an impact. It's just not as visible because those libraries are open and operating.
You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL. I'm Rick Howlett. We're talking about the Louisville's Free Public Library System. Lee Birchfield is here. He's director of the Free Public Library System. Chandra Gordon, executive director of the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation, also joins us. And Caitlin Robolino is here. She's with Educational Justice, which is a tutoring program, one of many nonprofits and other organizations that use the library and the library facilities for its purposes. We're going to take a break and come back with more discussion. But before we go into the break, let's hear from one of the folks that Caitlin Jackson spoke to who utilizes the library system. This is Izzy.
I'm Izzy Nally. The awesome free classes that they do and little workshops are really great. The variety of books is fantastic. I was one of those kids. My parents had me at like 15 and 16. And so poverty, we'll just say that. Library is a free resource. My grandpa loved taking me to the library because he knew that education was the way to pull yourself out of that. Mm-hmm. Especially like being a kid where you don't have a lot of opportunities, there's a lot of stuff and drama going on at home. Reading books was a way for me to escape into another world.
We get support for In Conversation from our sponsor, Kindred Healthcare, specializing in rehabilitation and long-term acute care services for 30 years. Questions about care after a hospital stay can be answered by speaking with a registered nurse at 1-866-KINDRED.
In Conversation wouldn't be possible without you. To support the work we do, visit WFPL.org/supportinconversation or look for the link in our show notes.
My name is Michaela Streeter. I go to JCC. I like this library better than the one on campus. It's just bigger and quieter, and I feel more, you know, safe here. Well, I think they have a wider variety of books here, like stuff that you don't need just for a classroom basis. So I like fictional books. I find that more here than over there.
If there was things that you'd like to see them add or services that you would want to see here, what would those be?
More books, and the aisles are kind of hard to navigate. Normally in other libraries, it's A to Z, or this is fictional, this is mysterious, this is religion, just things like that. I think that would help a little bit.
What does the library mean to you?
The library to me is knowledge. Knowledge is key. It's the power to the world. You don't have to go to school to have that, you know, just reading books. I bring my son here. He absolutely loves it. He's four. So I think it's a safe place.
That was Michaela, who Caitlin Jackson, our producer, caught up with this week at the main library, Louisville Free Public Library. You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL. Indeed, we're talking about the Louisville Free Public Library System with Director Lee Birchfield, Chandra Gordon, Executive Director of the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation, and Caitlin Robolino with the tutoring program Educational Justice. And Lee, let's go back to funding and budgets and that sort of thing for just a moment. Of course, the library is included in the Metro budget. What other sources of funding are available to you?
Sure. So the vast majority of our funding does come from Louisville Metro's budget. We have a little bit of money that we get, maybe $400,000, $500,000 a year that comes to us through a federal program that gives us discounts or refunds on costs that we spend for technology. We get a very small amount of money. I don't have the figure with me, but it's somewhere in the $100,000 a year range from the state. And that really is that and money that we generate ourselves through overdue fines, fees for printing and things like that are all of the operating money that we have. The other source of funding that we really have, Chandra can really speak to because it's the Library Foundation, and they do a lot of fundraising in support of our programming initiatives and capital projects like building a new library somewhere.
And Chandra, I assume, you know, the foundation works with an eye on the budget as well, the Metro budget.
Correct. But the funds that we raise, it states in our bylaws, and understandably so, we do not fund the operating costs of the library. The library is a public institution funded by public dollars. So basic services of the library are funded through our tax dollars. The foundation, the role of the foundation, again, is to fund those additional resources that really enhance the services of the library and the resources of the library.
And Caitlin, has the change in the budget, the funding and the hours, has that affected your program at all, what you're able to do?
Absolutely. So before they had really finalized the budget, I was working with the branch manager of Iroquois Library, Valerie, because we are there three times a week, Sundays, Mondays, and Wednesdays in the evenings and on Sundays afternoons. And so with the proposal initially that we saw, the branch manager basically told me, I don't know if we'll be able to host you guys at all anymore because you guys want evenings and you guys want Sundays. And those hours are going to be completely gone if the budget passes like the way it's supposed to. I was really relieved to hear recently that that's not going to be the case with Iroquois. So as of now, we are okay on that front, at least with Iroquois Library and South Central, because it is a regional library, so we have a little bit more flexibility in hours. However, we are kind of moving away from being only exclusively at libraries and hosting tutoring there, only because we are hesitant, not knowing, you know, if they're unsure of what their schedule will be and what resources they will have. We don't want to rely on something that's uncertain.
And Lee, I know over the years there have been attempts to pass a referendum, tax referendum, and that sort of thing. But how would that benefit? I know there was one a few years ago that there was really some high profile people that got behind it, but it still failed.
Sure. So the library has been on the ballot three times in its history to generate a taxing district that would provide funding for the library. Most recently, 2007, where voters in the end voted it down by a margin of about 2-1. So that really would have shifted the library to a funding model that is in use at the vast majority of public libraries in the state of Kentucky. So I think there are six right now counties in the state where, rather than having a dedicated funding stream that is dependable and reliable and can be adjusted as needed, the public library systems in those counties, like us, just have to be part of the budget process along with every other agency in city government. So the other mechanism that would have been in place had that referendum passed is that there would have been a citizen board of trustees. So it really would have created the library as more of a related agency to Metro government rather than a direct agency of Metro government. And it would have provided a funding stream. I'm not sure what the rate that was in the referendum was and what the total outcome would have been, but I would say it would probably have been somewhere in the neighborhood of $29 to $30 million a year. Mm-hmm. As compared to the 22 or 23 million that we're funded at this year.
You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL. We're talking Louisville's free public library system today. Give us a call if you have a question or comment about your library, the library system as a whole, what you'd like to see. Our line's open, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. Lee, let's just talk about the library in general. Of course, libraries have evolved with technology, but I'm just thinking as we're putting the show together that some traditions have really endured. First of all, you still have to have a library card, right, in order to engage the services.
Well, you have to have a library card in order to borrow materials mm-hmm. and take them out of the library. All of the other programming that we offer, though, a library card's really not required. We even allow out-of-town guests to come to our libraries and use our public computers to get on the internet and check their email. And they don't have to have a library card for that. Parents bring their children to story times. We don't check or scan library cards for that. Even our big author events, we had Celeste Ng at the library a few weeks ago. We send out free tickets for those programs just so we can have an idea of how many people are going to attend. But you don't have to have a library card to get them, and we don't check IDs at the door. It's all just free and available to the public.
And the Dewey Decimal System endures.
The Dewey Decimal System endures. It's interesting that one of the clips that you played while ago, somebody was talking about how to navigate the system. And so the problem is there's no great way to organize a public library. You don't want to put all of your fiction materials in the Dewey Decimal System. So we have a hybrid model right now where the nonfiction collection is organized by Dewey number. We train our staff on how to put materials in the right spot on the shelf. But all of our fiction materials, we separate out by genre. So you can go in and just look at the mysteries or just look at the science fiction novels.
And you mentioned at the top of the program that there many people think that because of technology, I guess that people aren't reading physical books, but they are.
People really are reading physical books. E-book circulation in a typical month accounts for about 20% of our total circulation. But just I looked this morning before I came here, I looked up a couple of numbers. Since the Northeast Regional Library opened, they're averaging about 2,600 items per day that are being checked out there. None of that is e-books. That's all picture books for children. It might be books on CD. It might be a DVD or a music CD, and it might be a print book, but it is all physical materials, and they are still really popular. And one of the things that has surprised us with both the expanded St. Matthews and the new Northeast Library is how popular they are. We're seeing record-breaking numbers at both those locations in terms of the number of items being checked out.
And I was just going to ask you, going back to the regional libraries, they have taken off very well, it seems like.
They have been great resources. So, one of the things that one of the first person you played on the clip also talked about was how they wish there were more books. So one of the budget issues that the public library system in Louisville has is that we don't have enough money to spend on books. In a typical year, we'll spend around $2 million a year to buy new materials, and that includes ebooks that we're purchasing. That's roughly the same amount of money that the Lexington Public Library spends to buy materials for a much larger library, a much smaller library system serving a much smaller population. But one of the things that the regional libraries do is it gives people who live further out from downtown a place that they can go where there is a deeper collection with a larger selection so that they can see those things that there's just not room for in a neighborhood library like the Iroquois Library or the Fairdale Library.
Another Twitter question, has anyone considered partnerships with local coffee shops or other businesses to bring more people to the library and provide additional income?
Well, a couple of ways to answer that question. So we do have a partnership with a local coffee shop, and in the next few weeks, we'll see a coffee shop open in our new Northeast Regional Library. We'll have to see over time how successful that is and how much revenue it's able to generate and how much profit it's able to generate for the vendor. We're considering all possibilities right now in terms of how to generate revenue. But the other thing I want to mention is that we did do this past winter a partnership with Heine Brothers Coffee, as well as some other retail and restaurant outlets. We had a winter reading program. We called it Books and Brews, and we would do pop-up libraries at a Heine Brothers or at Hopcat on Bardstown Road. And so we would have a small collection of books, and you could come in and sign up for the adult winter reading program and check out some books and talk to us about library services. So our plan for the coming weeks and months is to investigate every possibility for how to continue to grow this library system.
502-814-TALK is our number. If you have a question or a comment about the Louisville Free Public Library System, Lee Birchfield, who is director of the library system, is here, along with Chandra Gordon, executive director of the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation, and Caitlin Robolino, who is with Educational Justice. That's a tutoring program that uses library resources and facilities. And I want to ask you a little bit more about the program, Caitlin. How do you go about recruiting the tutors and gathering the young people that need help for the program?
Yeah, so there's a few different ways. One, for sure, is that we are always giving out flyers. As you see, I'm trying to give you flyers right now today to take. We also go to the library and give our information to the branch managers there. We talk to them. We're always asking them to give our flyers out generously. We also actually, Mike Mays, who is, I think he's head of Heine Brothers, he's on our board. And so we partner with Heine Brothers a lot too for a lot of our fundraising. And we go into JCPS schools as well as some partnerships with private schools to recruit tutors. And wherever we can get our name out, wherever I go, just like right now, if I'm out hanging out with friends, I can say the same for my coworkers. I try to mention our nonprofit as much as possible, and I'm always just plugging for them.
Talk about the results of the program. How long has the program been around, and what kind of results have you seen?
It's relatively new, so it's about 4 years old. Our executive director was involved in our program for most of that time, but she just recently came on as executive director this year. So this year, we have seen a lot more growth in terms of the people that we're reaching. I know the program, when it started 4 years ago, was maybe a handful of kids, and now, right now, we're currently at about 200 students that we're serving, and we're only hoping to continue to grow from there. I think the biggest impact that I've seen is the relationships that are created between the students and their tutors. A lot of these students come in pretty hesitant about going to tutoring, especially when you come, speaking from personal experience, when you come from a low income background and you know you're not doing well in school and you want to do well in school, but it's a little bit embarrassing to ask for help. Sometimes I think it's a pride thing. And if you have someone there that's specifically there to help you, it's a really huge encouragement for you to see someone that really values education and that's there to help you and excel and really push you to be a better student, not just academically, but socially and emotionally too.
Let's take a call. Mary from Louisville is on line two. Hi, Mary. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to thank Lee and Chandra and the library staff for all that they do. I'm not sure that the general public realizes the neurological network that the library is. It's not just a brick building in your neighborhood. They are capable of tackling incredibly complex issues that the public wrestles with, and they are challenging the city in many ways, helping the citizenry understand issues. They, Paul Burns and Tracy Haichu at the Main Library, do an amazing job of marketing. We've worked with them recently with the Project Enid. I'm president of our Enid Generations of Women Sculptors. We're going to have an exhibit at the Main Library in August 17th through October 8th, thanks to them. And their ability to be there and reach out in a big way is just phenomenal. We are so grateful. Thank you for all you do. I'm part of the oldest book club in Louisville, too. And it is a treasure. And anything we could do to support the neurological network you are, we want to encourage everyone to help make our libraries continue. Thank you.
Okay, Mary, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Jeff from Louisville, who wants to talk about the budget situation. Hi, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Everybody's been talking about X's and O's and numbers and budget and where this comes from. But I think the thing that is being not addressed are the sub-issues of priorities and where our city lies in its priorities and its attempts to move into the future. I'm from Silicon Valley, okay? I know we're not Silicon Valley, but if we want to move into the future, we have to do things like fund libraries to make up for past racial injustices, social inequality. And I think it says a lot about a city. And I'm a waiter. I don't make a lot of money. But when we spent $115,000, and the mayor's office is getting tired of hearing me call them about this, you're spending $115,000 on Derby Entertainment, and I waited on these people wearing Rolexes. Okay, so the city council is deciding they want to spend $115,000 to wine and dine out-of-town guests at the same time they're cutting services for low-income, mostly people of color, okay, all over the city. They closed my library. So you're closing my library as I'm waiting on somebody in a fancy restaurant from out-of-town on the dime. It shows priorities.
All right.
And the lip service doesn't cut it.
So thanks for your call, Jeff. Appreciate it. We won't get any argument from the folks here that more money is needed, right, Lee?
Right. And it's interesting that the caller mentioned Silicon Valley. So, you know, one of the things that we monitor on a recurring basis is how we compare to other cities, both cities a little smaller and cities a lot larger. I recently ran a report looking at every public library system in the country that has a population that it serves of 400,000 or more. And what I like to look at is the operating expenditures per capita. So that's a ratio that allows us to compare ourselves regardless of the population being served by a library. Those rates range from about $15 per person up to $150 per person. We are in about the bottom quartile of that. So I think there's a great case that can be made that whatever other priorities we think are important, and I agree with a lot of the priorities that the mayor believes in, that the bottom line is we need more money for our library system.
We're going to talk much more about the library after a break with Lee Birchfield, Chandra Gordon, and Caitlin Robolino. Stay with us. We'll be back with more in a moment. This is In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL.
This is a pivotal moment for the West End of Louisville, but is it revitalization or gentrification?
Any improvement they do around here has got to be better.
They're not really asking us, do we want it, do we need it, and can we benefit by it?
The rents are going to rise so fast that they're going to have to leave.
Here Today, a new podcast, will track the changes in West Louisville and how they affect the people who call it home. Follow us at heretodaypodcast.org.
My name's Greg Bland, and I'm homeless. I stand at St. Vincent de Paul Shelter.
So what do you use the library for?
Well, it's only so many places you can go. You know, I feel like the library is the best place to come to. You know, you can do a little research, watch movies on your computer or phone or whatever. They got other study books, you know, work on your GED or whatever you got to do. You know, a lot of resources here, you know, book material.
What services do you think they should add?
Add to it? It's kind of hard to say on that. I mean, they got a lot of different reading materials, spiritual books and stuff like that. Depends on what your needs are. I feel like it's the best place to come to based on being homeless, you know, and I use that, you know, get out of the elements outside, the heat, the cold. It's a blessing, yeah. I'm glad they're keeping it open, you know. My other library, some of them closing up mm-hmm. based on what I see on the news. So, you know, I take advantage of why I'm here. And once I get my place, I'm pretty sure I'll still be coming here.
That was, Greg, who Caitlin Jackson caught up with yesterday at the main Louisville Free Public Library here downtown. I'm Rick Howlett, and you're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL. We're talking about the library system here in Louisville with Director Lee Birchfield, Chandra Gordon, who's Executive Director of the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation, and Caitlin Robolino, whose group Educational Justice is a tutoring program, uses library resources and facilities. And we want to hear from you as well. 502-814-TALK if you have a question or comment about the library system. 502-814-8255. And we're also on Twitter. WFPL News is our handle. You can find us on Facebook as well. And Lee, going back to Greg's comments there, the library really, it's many things to many people, but for many, it is a lifeline to resources to improve one's life.
Well, it is. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of people take for granted is the ability, either when you get home from work or even while you're at work, to be able to pull up a news story from a news outlet or to check an email from a friend or family member. But for people who don't have internet access at home, or even people who have a cell phone but who have a limited data plan on that, libraries really do a great job of helping address the digital divide problem that you hear so many organizations in Louisville talking about. It's a really pressing problem that has a profound impact on a lot of people.
And Chandra, I know you wanted to follow up on what Jeff said earlier about priorities in the city and having a good library system.
Exactly. I just wanted to speak a bit to, we're talking a lot about the operational dollars and per capita, things like that. What we're referring to are the services and resources that we are providing to the people in our community. And these dollars have a real impact on the people that are coming into our libraries. So, for example, just even in reference to the homeless gentleman that spoke about the library, there are families that come to our libraries and children who participate in programming there. The out-of-school time is so important. And, you know, when the kids come to the libraries, everybody is welcome. You know, it's an equalizer across our community. When we talk about per capita dollars, what we're talking about is whether you have to wait, you know, what is it, 21 weeks maybe for a book versus, you know, a couple of weeks. Those dollars provide the money that Lee is able then to purchase the books for and things like that. When we don't have operational dollars to pay for staff, we're not doing the outreach in the community. We're not reaching the kids or providing programming. So on that note, I know a lot of folks are wondering how they can be involved. And I do want to mention that you have two opportunities with the library as a private citizen to really make a difference. The largest source of revenue for our library are public dollars. We have a Friends of the Library organization that is a separate 501c3, and they advocate on behalf of the library, and they talk to our community leaders, and they make sure that they understand how important the library is. So I urge anyone that wants to be an advocate for the library to reach out to our Friends of the Library. That they've got a button on the library's page. I would also urge anyone that is interested in helping Lee with the dollars for books and programming to reach out to us at the Library Foundation. That's what we're there for. we're not going to pay for the staff and the lights, but we are going to raise those funds for the books for, you know, to help with technology and to help with those capital dollars. So folks can get involved, they can have their voices heard, and they can really make a difference.
502-814-TALK is the number if you have a question or comment about Louisville's free public library system. And Leanne from Louisville is on the line, has a question about, looks like, book donations. Hi, Leanne. What's on your mind?
Hello, if the library would accept donations of books, DVDs, probably not CDs, but just curious if you all accept donations.
Absolutely. So we accept donations all the time. We work with the Friends of the Library. So in any collection of materials that are donated to the library, there will be some things in there that we will add to the collection and will become part of our circulating collection at one of our locations. Other things may go to the Friends if they're things that we don't think are appropriate for addition to the collection. If they go to the Friends, then the Friends will put them in a book sale and may sell those to raise money to buy other things that are more needed in the library system. But if you contact any of your local library branches or the Friends of the Library, you can get information on how to go about donating materials.
The Friends of the Library book sale, one of the more popular events for people who like to read.
Yes.
All right, Leanne, thank you for your call. We have another Twitter question. When the main branch got flooded 5 to 10 years ago, 2008, I believe that was, did insurance cover the total cost of repairs and renovations, or did the Louisville Free Public Library have to dip into their operating budget?
Well, we didn't use operating budget for that. So I want to confess up front to a handicap that at the time that happened, I was the IT manager at the library. So I can talk a lot more about the IT operations and the overall operations. But the director at the time, Craig Buteau, did a fantastic job of turning a disaster into something really good for the library. We did get a significant amount of insurance money, but we were also able to connect that with private money that was raised, as well as some grant money that we were able to get, so that we were able not only to repair the flood damage, but in some cases to actually restore that historic 1908 building back to its original grandeur.
I remember covering that flood and going to a press conference that later that day, because that storm hit in the morning and the entire You could have dove into the water into the basement.
It was about six to eight feet, depending on where in the basement level of either of the two buildings at Main you were. It was 6 to 8 feet of water in the basement that first had to be pumped out. And then basically the entire basement on both in both the 1969 building and the 1908 building was just completely gutted back to original and renovated.
Another library tradition that many people remember from their childhoods that still remains, you still have a bookmobile system, correct?
We do still have a bookmobile system. It's not what it once was, I will say, and one of the reasons for that is the flood. So at the time of the flood in 2008, we had two children's bookmobiles and we had an adult bookmobile. And all of that was damaged in the flood. After the flood, we now have one children's bookmobile, and rather than an adult bookmobile, we have an adult outreach vehicle. So the bookmobile actually had a collection of materials. You'd drive it to a location and people could walk through and browse. Most people have been on a bookmobile at some point. The outreach vehicle is a little different. We have a great community resource who selects materials and takes them to a particular location. So it's a much smaller collection of materials. So we aren't seeing as many items circulate on that. And since I've been director for about 6 months now, one of the things that we're starting to talk about is how we can kind of recover some of those bookmobile services.
And I wanted to say a little something about this. Plans for the bookmobile are a perfect example of the impact that operational dollars have. Because a bookmobile campaign, wow, that would be great. That would be so much fun. I think people could really get behind that and understand that. The library has to have the staff and the ability to maintain that bookmobile. So that's one of the considerations when you're talking about operational dollars and how it impacts services.
Let's talk about some of the programs and the time we have left. And again, if you have a question or comment about Louisville's Free Public Library System, give us a call, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. We're on Twitter, WFPL News. We're talking with Lee Birchfield, who's director of the Louisville Free Public Library, Chandra Gordon, executive director of the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation, and Caitlin Robolino, who's with Educational Justice. That's a tutoring program that works with the library and uses some of its facilities. You have numerous children's programs. Some have asked about drag queen story time. There had been some protests that but drew a lot of people, dozens of people. Will that continue?
Well, we don't have any plans to do another one right now. I will say that the one that we had was very successful. We had, it looked to me like about 150 people in there. That would be parents and children. And, you know, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about that program. What ended up happening was a drag queen came in, read two or three picture books to some children. We also had a children's librarian in there who read a book to the children. And then they had some activities. They had a little dance party. They had some dress-up activities. They had firefighter uniforms and police uniforms and princess uniforms. And so kids could dress up and just have a great time. So we were there for about an hour and a half. After that, there was a craft program. Every one of our children's story times is designed to help kids develop the skills that they need to be successful in kindergarten. So it's, you know, letter recognition, shape recognition, color recognition, being able to follow instructions, learning how to use scissors, all of those sort of core skills that people have to develop in order to be successful in kindergarten. And that's really what the kids were coming to learn. There was also a message as part of this particular story time of being willing to accept others even if they're different from you. And, you know, with all the bullying that takes place in our country now, particularly with the availability of sort of 24-hour access to terrify somebody through Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, it's a really important message for kids to get that, you know, people are different and you have to be willing to accept people who are different from you. So, I think there's a lot of sort of exaggerated fear caused by hearing about something like this because people don't really understand what's happening there.
All right, let's go back to the phone. And Carlos from Middletown. Hello, Carlos. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. And I've used the Northeast facility a couple of times. Let me tell you, it's an incredible facility. And I, the times that I've been there, I've been going to work. And I'm wondering if there is a system that you can put in place where when I go in, I could do a financial donation. Like I'm just talking about a couple of dollars, $2-3 that I can drop in when I go in. And you can collect some funds by doing that. People can donate right there. Instead of going to a coffee shop, I'm going there instead of buying a coffee, although I know that you're going to place a coffee shop there. But right now, instead of buying a coffee, paying $5, I can donate $4 or $5 there just to go there because I go there to work.
Sure. Great question. So, you know, I've been to museums where they do that. They have the big glass box up front and you can just drop in money when you go in. I believe I'm correct in saying that if you approach a staff person at Northeast and tell them you'd like to make a donation, that they will happily accommodate you. So we actually do have, I think, a mechanism in place where you can do that, but we probably don't promote it as much as we should. I expect that Chandra will probably chime in here in a second also to give you a URL where you can go to the Library Foundation website. I'll just echo something that Chandra said. So sure, talk to the staff there. We'll see if they can accommodate your donation. But also think about membership in the Friends or talking to the Library Foundation. I think, am I correct, Chandra, you've also started some sort of recurring donation program?
We have, Lee. Thank you so much. We do. You can go to the Library Foundation's website at www.lfpl.org. LibraryFoundation.org. And you can make a gift, and I would encourage anyone that wants to do that to consider making a recurring monthly gift. And wouldn't $15, I think that was about what we thought the tax was going to be. So, hey, how about $15 monthly for your library? That would be a great thing. With that $15, you will also a membership to our Friends organization for 1 year is available to you as well. So you can do both things at once, financially support your library and also be an advocate for your library. We'd love for you to do that.
Let's go back to the phone. Norm is with us. Hi, Norm, you're on the air.
How are you?
Fine. How are you, sir?
I have one quick question. How does the library, what is the process for selecting titles and purchasing books?
Sure. So it's actually, as you might imagine, it's pretty complicated. We buy several hundred thousand items each year. We have a team of selectors that are professional librarians that work in branches all over the county. And each one of them will typically have an area of expertise. So we'll have children's librarians that select children's picture books. We'll have somebody who's a teen librarian who selects teen materials, and they actually go into a website from our book distributor and put together shopping carts and send those shopping carts in. They get processed, orders are placed, and shipped to the location that those materials are bought for. In the course of doing that, they do consult book reviews, of course, bestseller lists. They have regular conversation with the other members of the selection team. So it's a pretty involved process where each item is pretty much hand-selected by somebody on staff at the library.
Norm, thanks for your call. I wanted to ask you before we the time gets away from us about late fees and that sort of thing, because you do generate some revenue from that. You wish you didn't have to, I guess, because it's based on trust and you went, here's the book and we need it back by a certain time. But what is the policy on bringing back something late or not at all?
Sure. So we are still charging overdue fines for materials that are checked out and not returned by their due date. We try to have some lenient policies on that. If it creates a particular financial hardship, you can talk with the staff and they will usually work out some sort of payment plan so that you don't have to stop checking materials out while you pay that down. We also have a program where children can read down fines on their books. You know, we know five-year-olds don't have jobs usually, and so we'll let them read and report their reading to us and sort of give them credit against fines for something like that. But, you know, there's also a national trend where a lot of public libraries in the country are doing away with overdue fines. If you really start drilling into the data on who the fines are owed by, it often has sort of the reverse effect of what libraries are trying to accomplish. The people who are most economically challenged are the ones that are most whose use of the library is most disrupted when they incur overdue fines. So we've not started really having those conversations in earnest, in part just because it seems an odd conversation to have when you're struggling to find operating dollars. But I expect in the future we'll have to consider whether that would be right for this community.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Caitlin Robolino, very quickly, Educational Justice, where can people get information? What's your website?
Yeah, just www.educationaljustice.org.
Thank you, Caitlin Robolino, for joining us, along with Chandra Gordon from the Louisville Free Public Library Foundation and Lee Birchfield, Director of the Louisville Free Public Library. Enjoyed having you all on today. Thank you. Thanks to our In Conversation production team as well, Caitlin Jackson, Brad Yost, Ashley Clark Thompson, Russell Wells. Our opening and closing theme was composed by Kojin Toshiro, and I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening. Coming up on WFPL's In Conversation, Louisville's Hispanic community. What is life like in Kentucky amid the Trump immigration policy and, for some, the looming threat of deportation? Our guests will include Edgardo Mancilla from the Americana World Community Center, and we want to hear from you. Join us for In Conversation Friday morning at 11 on 89.3 WFPL with program support from Kindred Healthcare.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.